We have to talk to each other. We have to be honest and clear about what we're dealing with. Essentially, this is what the world needs to do to stop the spread of new infectious diseases like the Hendra virus. That's a message from John McKenzie, a professor of tropical infectious diseases at Curtin University and the keynote speaker today at an infectious diseases conference in Canberra. Professor McKenzie says there has to be a united approach between the veterinary and the human health professionals, and there needs to be more transparency between countries about exactly what crises they're dealing with. John McKenzie joins me now. Welcome to Life Matters, John.
Thank you. Good morning.
Let's start by talking about the emerging disease threats. Now, Hendra, as I understand it, was passed from bats to horses.
Yes, that's correct.
And unfortunately, some people in Australia have caught it from horses and they've become very ill and most of them have died.
I think about, yes, that's true. There's about, I think, four people have died, sadly.
Yeah. And we have it here. Can we ever eliminate it?
Probably not. It's caused by a virus which is naturally in flying foxes. It doesn't cause them any harm. So I think the chance of eliminating it is almost nil. It's generally not a real concern because we don't often see it. It's just these very rare occasions, unfortunately, when we do get this spillover from the wildlife host into the domestic host.
Do we know if it needs the vector of the horse for it to become lethal to us?
Well, we do. So far, all the human cases have arisen in that direction. Mm. There's been, despite a lot of people looking after sick bats, which we call bat carers, none of them have ever actually got the disease directly from bats. That's not to say it might not happen in the future. We can look at another very similar disease, which of a virus which is very closely related to Hendra, that we discovered since then. It's called Nipah virus.
I've heard of that one, yes.
That's up in Southeast Asia, mainly. And here we see an outbreak that was very similar to Hendra in a sense, in that it spilt from bats, but to a different domestic host, this time to pigs, and from pigs to humans. And in this instance, the virus was much more transmissible. It transmitted between pigs. But when humans got it, there was no such transmission. You know, with humans, if you like, were a dead-end host. And that was how we thought these viruses worked, in a sense, until about 3 years later, when this particular virus, Nipah, reappeared, this time in Bangladesh and India. And in these new outbreaks, for the first time, we didn't need pigs. So the virus was actually infecting humans directly. So that indicates that these viruses do have options, probably,
yes,
that so far we haven't seen with Hendra.
So obviously, in some way, the bats were coming in contact with people. Do we
yes,
know how?
We do know how. In one instance, the virus is probably quite high titers at some times in the bat's life cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's in their saliva and possibly their urine. And these bats obviously eat mainly nectar and fruit. And they tend more and more, as we cut down native forests, to go for fruit trees, and ornamental shrubs and so forth. And in this instance, they go for the date palms. And they're very keen on date palm juice, which, of course, people collect in these countries for drink and to make food. And so the bats contaminate the date palm juice. They try and get into the collecting vessels, and they
yes,
contaminate with their saliva and so forth.
I see how it happens.
And also probably their urine.
This is a not uncommon scenario, is it, John? I think it's called zoonosis, where a virus or a pathogen comes from a different species and has contact with humans. And in humans, it turns out to be imposes a much greater burden on us than it does in the host. And this goes back to what I was saying when I was introducing you about human health and animal health specialists working together. How well does that happen in this country?
In Australia, it works very well, generally. And most of the committees that are responsible for communicable disease intelligence and monitoring and surveillance really do have both the veterinary side and the human side involved. For instance, we have people from the Animal Health Laboratory in Geelong on these committees and so on. So we do communicate well. I'm sure it could still be improved, but on the whole, we're pretty good.
In other countries, it isn't quite as good, I understand.
No, I think we do see changes to the better, but nevertheless, there's still many areas where clinicians don't seem to want to talk to veterinarians and where the communication really is very poor.
Now, what about the transparency issue, John? Do some countries keep their problems quiet, as it were?
Well, if you think about this in a kind of realistic national kind of point of view, I suppose, yes, we tend not to be totally out in the open because so many of these types of diseases can quite seriously affect trade and also tourism. And obviously we don't want to, the countries don't want to frighten away tourists, nor do they want to have anything that's going to inhibit their trade opportunities. So countries aren't always totally open, I suppose, in terms of how well they do report diseases. And I don't think it's only in developing countries. I think developed countries are equally at risk here of not being fully open and above board.
Because there are, as I understand, fairly new reporting requirements, and most countries have signed up to them, but not everybody's actually putting them into place yet. Is that right?
That's right. The new international health regulations came into play in 2007. And in the old days, we used to have international health regulations, particularly for three diseases, cholera, plague, and yellow fever. And we used to have little yellow cards, if you remember, way back when we used to have to go through customs with these things. This is quite a while ago now. But nevertheless, they were the old regulations. And the new ones that came in 2007 is much broader. And here, countries have to report back to WHO, the World Health Organization, any what we call public health threat that has maybe international ramifications, international threats. And so if they have a major outbreak of disease, they're meant to be able to report this in a set time, maybe 24 hours, 48 hours, and they have to be able to not only monitor the threat themselves but and diagnose that threat. So they have to have the capacity to be able to do these things. And not all countries have this capacity.
On Life Matters today, my guest is John McKenzie. He's a professor of tropical infectious diseases at Curtin University, keynote speaker today at the Communicable Diseases Control Conference in Canberra. That's what we're talking about at the moment. If we, I suppose, look closer to home now, John, I read there was quite an increase in mosquito-borne diseases like Ross River and Barmer Forest with the Victorian floods. What is emerging now, or what has been emerging, in Queensland?
Well, I'm not so sure about Queensland so much, but certainly in Victoria we've seen a lot of problems arising over the last couple of weeks with Murray Valley encephalitis and a virus called Kunjin, which is really a form of West Nile virus.
And these are all mosquito-vectored, aren't
they? These are all mosquito-vectored. We generally see Murray Valley encephalitis occasionally up in northern Australia, particularly in the Kimberley and Northern Territory. And sometimes that spills over into the Pilbara in Western Australia and down to as far as Catherine and even Alice Springs in the Northern Territory. And we see it occasionally in Northern Queensland too. But very, very rarely do we see it in Southeastern Australia.
It can be quite a serious illness, can't it?
Absolutely. Yes, about 20% of the people who catch it can die. And those who survive, there's probably a percentage who have permanent sequelae.
What does that mean?
Well, they have some problem, if you like, thereafter. There's some sequels, if you like, to the infection. Might be mental retardation. It could be some kind of nerve palsy. There are different types of sequelae that you can have.
So you end up with a legacy that's a bad thing.
Yes, but only in a few people, but nevertheless it does happen.
Looking at the older infectious diseases we're more familiar with for a moment, measles is having a resurgence in Western Sydney and Wollongong. For example, there have been 45 cases of measles in the last 3 months, more than the number of cases in the last 3 years.
Yes, this is one of the sad items, shall we say, and that it really means that we're not really completely fulfilling our obligations with respect to childhood immunisation. Not everyone's getting immunised as they should be, and I think we need to be doing more to make quite sure that all children are immunised.
Because there is an opportunity with measles, as I understand it. If you look at rinderpest, which is a related disease which cattle get, we have eliminated it, or we're very close to being able to say we can eliminate rinderpest.
Absolutely. Now, this is certainly gives us added attraction, shall we say, to our ability to eradicate measles. It's always been on the cards. It's been suggested and talked about over the years that this is perhaps the next one after smallpox that we should be eradicating, next human disease. And it's certainly very plausible, and it's certainly doable, but it's going to be fairly costly. And it's really, do we have the political will and also the financial might, shall we say, to be able to do that. And I very much hope we do. We certainly can. And measles is a very nasty virus, so if we can get rid of it, all the better.
This goes back to the point that I was making when I was introducing you, and I believe the theme of what you're talking about today, it's about not so much understanding diseases. I mean, there's obviously more work to do there, but understanding and then trying to change how we behave.
Yes, you know, this is really my main thrust, in a sense, in that if we look at all these different diseases, most of them emerge and most of them spread through human activities and human interventions. And if we know what we're doing and what we're doing wrong, for instance, or how we can do things better, then we can reduce this spread and we can reduce the risk. And that's really what I want to talk about today. So in other words, if we know, for instance, that this particular mosquito-borne virus disease, we just mentioned some a moment ago, if we can control mosquitoes, for instance, we don't build houses around wetlands, as one example. In other words, we're not putting people at risk by where they live. And when we build dams, we're much more circumspect on where we build them, what kind of edges they have. So we have water along the edges, which is not we don't flood edges on a regular basis. We reduce the mosquito breeding sites along the edges. And there are lots of different things we can do along these tracks.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of different things in these. And we saw in England, for instance, not a few years ago, this outbreak of bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or mad cow disease.
Yes.
And this was simply because we'd changed the method that we used to render carcasses and so on to make cow cake. And we went across from a heating system to a chemical system, and this didn't inactivate prion diseases. And so the next thing we know, we must have had a carcass that had a prion infection, and without realizing it, instead of using heat to render the carcass, using chemicals didn't get rid of that prion, and so all we did was infect a lot of more animals. So, you know, we have to be very careful how we do things sometimes.
Yes, indeed. John, it's been fascinating. Thank you very much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
John McKenzie's Professor of Tropical Infectious Diseases at Curtin University and the keynote speaker at the Communicable Disease Control Conference in Canberra today. Details on the website, abc.net.au/rn/lifematters. Coming up later in the show, the Master and the Apprentice, actually the Master and the Broadcaster, MasterChef Adam Liao joins me in the studio. Before that, though, men losing babies.